It doesn't show a watch here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Before introducing our guest, I would like to take a brief minute about the definition of democracy, a form of government in which the supreme power is retained by the people. Throughout the many years, however, the power of the people has weakened and power of global representation for the people has strengthened and refocused. We have seen much injustice in the country and around the world, in the communities and in the penal system. We have witnessed corruption, lies, deception, abuses, and so many other unwelcome barriers to success. There is enormous concern over mass incarceration in the United States, when in fact no other country has such a problem. We the people are fed up, and many are taking back their role in uniting for justice. Today we are going to hear from coordinators for yet another peaceful rally, a National Day of Freedom and Justice rally, to take place on August 22, 2020. Janet Lee and Aaron Nichols will provide the audience with insight into the injustices in the U.S. which brought them to this long-awaited decision to have a national, now global, Day of Freedom and Justice event. The people are the government, and the people are finally beginning to fully exercise their rights in the resolutions to problems occurring in the communities, prison system, courts, and elsewhere. So let's welcome our guests, Janet Lee and Aaron Nichols. Janet, are you on with us?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay. You want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we can go into the event?
Sure, yes. My group is CPR, which stands for Coalition for Prison Reform, and we were contacted by someone who is actually in a federal facility and asked us to put on this event. And, of course, it's something we had just absolutely jumped on right away because there's so many injustices going on that need to be brought to life. And so many people don't know what's going on. And so we started to organize a national event, and that was to be feet on the ground in every state across the United States. But it's grown so tremendously that we have now four other countries. Also, many of the states have more than one event planned for that day. And this is something that we're going to continue. We actually have submitted a proclamation to request that the National Day of Freedom and Justice become a yearly national holiday to be addressed the 4th August of every year, 4th weekend of every August every year. And we're going to follow up. This is not going to be a one-day event. This is going to be something that we will continue fighting for each and every day. But we do want to have the rallies, the national events, every year.
Now, just so the audience doesn't get confused with Black Lives Matter, can you speak a little bit about the differences between the rally that you will be putting on and theirs?
Yes, actually, we have worked with some of the Black Lives Matters, and we welcome their participation. I think what has happened in some of the things that we've seen on TV with the riots and the burning of the buildings and stuff like that, that is not the official Black Lives Matters group. It's people that are tagging onto the name. Black Lives Matters groups are actually normally very, very peaceful events. And so our events, of course, we're saying they all have to be peaceful. You know, we're not going to get involved in any major riots or anything like that. We also have the All Inmate Lives Matters and, you know, so many other big groups. And I think the thing with the Black Lives Matters group is it is very important during this time, that people are aware that there are racial deficiencies and discrepancies and everything in every organization that you come in contact with across the United States and even in the correctional field when you look at, there's one in four Caucasian males, one in four black male as opposed to 1 in 16 white males in the prison system. And the racial injustices are very real.
Now, also the Sioux, I interviewed Chinupa Imani, which he was on the show with us last week. He was talking about the Sioux tribe out of South Dakota. And apparently they were also talking about the injustices that they have been going through as Native Indians in the United States. Have you had a chance to connect with him or heard anything about their protest or their information?
He had called me and left a voicemail on my phone, and then my phone got wet, and so I lost his contact information. You told me yesterday how to go about getting it back, and I have not done that yet, but I do intend fully to reach out to him today, because I think it's important of all nationalities to be involved in this. You know, myself, I'm Native American of the Apache tribe, and I think it's just it's important that we all unite as one in this fight.
Yes. There is so much going on in the month of August. I understand there's going to be two other demonstrations. One is supposed to be from August 21st to August to September 9th. I don't know if you had a chance to see that one, but that was another. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about what your organization is about and how you came about all this?
Sure. Actually, I personally came about all this 24 years ago when my son at 12 years old was sent to a juvenile prison, and some very, very bad things happened to him there. And when that all took place, then I started working with so many advocates and you know, the nonprofits and the pro bono attorneys and, you know, Emory Law School, Building Blocks for Youth out of Washington. They all actually came to North Carolina, where I was at the time, and we lobbied before legislator, and we held rallies, and we did all kinds of things. We were actually influential in getting that particular facility closed down. At that time, I started my own group, and I kept that group in effect for probably about 15, 20 years. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to retire. I'm going to take a break. But I can't. This is in my DNA. And this is just something that I have to do. I don't feel complete unless I'm working on this and trying to make a change. So we have formed a new group, and it's called CPR, which is the Coalition for Prison Reform. I do some paralegal work for people. I assist, you know, different organizations and different groups and stuff to work on people's clemencies, commutations. You know, if nothing else, maybe I can find a private investigator, pro bono attorney, you know, any way that we can assist, we do. And then we also are holding the rallies, because the thing is, so many people in the public aren't aware what's going on in these facilities. You know, I worked a lot on the big Mississippi cases. And I had people here in Virginia telling me, oh, no, stuff like that doesn't happen in the Department of Corrections. Yes, it does. And it happens in every Department of Corrections. It may not be as extreme as Mississippi, but it does happen. And, you know, there's so much police brutality within these facilities. Safety is a real concern. Humane living conditions is, you know, way up there. The food and the nutritional value, that's in the reentry process. You know, a lot of times people are just released with no resources to help them from recidivism. So there's some really, really important issues that need to be addressed. across the board, nationwide, and we need, not only do we need national uniformity in these facilities, we need national accountability. And so
exactly.
I think we were talking yesterday, yeah, and we were talking yesterday on the show about resources and, you know, things of that nature for people when they do get released. You know, if they're released with nowhere to go, no food, no clothes, no money, not even an ID, their options are so limited that they're almost forced into their old ways. And they have no other choice. And so we want to make sure that they will have some advocates and some people working with them and for them to help them. And as long as those things are in play, I could just about guarantee the recidivism rate is going to drop enormously.
There's so much going on right now. I agree with everything you're saying. As an advocate myself, and I really admire you. As I mentioned, I believe, yesterday when we had you on with Tom Dorma, I agree with everything that's going on right now. And I think these protests, these rallies, these peaceful rallies are very much needed because of all the things that are going on in this country. And the police brutality, even the Department of Corrections across the country, the abuse that's going on in the prisons, the deprivations. You know, people are being thrown in solitary, especially with the coronavirus. It's even worse because there's no oversight of what's going on in the prisons. And the prisoners are suffering more than ever now. And they're not getting any relief. There's no relief in sight. They don't know when this coronavirus is going to end. They're being abused. They're being deprived. And unfortunately, the good people that work for the government are not speaking up about their peers that are being so destructive and being so abusive. They're not speaking up. And this is where we need to look at them as well. Because if they are seeing this abuse, and I know they are, and they're not speaking up on behalf of these people that are being abused, then they're not serving the public. They're contributing to the problem. And these protests, if this is what needs to take place to bring awareness, I totally agree with everything that you're talking about. The abuse in the communities, and again, unfortunately, there are police officers, law enforcement that are good, but because they're not speaking up, the good ones, they're causing and they're contributing to the problems that we're having. If you can, tell the audience how they can contact you, how they can get involved, even if they can't be in the demonstration, the rally, other ways that they can help. You can talk about that, Janet. I'd appreciate it.
Sure. To become involved in the National Day of Freedom and Justice event, we do have a Facebook page that is called the National Day of Freedom and Justice. So you can look us up on Facebook. We also have a new website. It's not fully completed yet, but it is up and running. It's called freedomandjustice.info. You can go on that website and you can search locations. We are updating that several times a day as we're getting new information and new locations that are being added to that. And or you can contact me on Facebook, Janet Lee. And I also have a phone number that you can call or text for this event. It's 540-958-1847.
That's awesome. People are asking how they can help those that are unable to be in the protest, those that are disabled or elderly. There's a lot of people that have been asking of ways that they can actually help. And I think it's awesome that it's bringing about, like you say, all races, all genders. It's bringing about everybody in unity, finally coming together.
Right. And we do have, because we understand that there are people who simply can't get out to join us. So there are several Zooms. We have that information on our page as well. Some states are doing a Zoom particular to that state. And then we have some that are just overall, you know, it talks about all the injustices across the board. We have some people from Cut 50 who are going to be speakers on that, trying to get more people, more well-known people to bring these things to light. I talked to a lady yesterday who is actually Snoop Dogg's mom, and so we're real excited. We may have Snoop Dogg doing a caravan rally, which is another way that we can do the events. Is if it's, you know, we understand it's in the heat of the summer, it's really hot, and if you can't get out with your feet on the ground, then we are forming caravans where people can drive around, select locations, and they can decorate their signs, you know, they can speak through a PA, so we can still get the same messages across, just in a different way.
Awesome. You know, I was thinking too, I don't know if you've thought about this, but it would be so awesome for a lot of people that can't make the rally to also contact all their legislative members about prisoners' rights to vote. You know, this is something that I have a real problem with when they take away the prisoners' rights to vote. Because the prisoners, if they're citizens of the country, there's no reason why their rights should not be taken away from them. There's no reason why they should take their rights away from them. Prisoners are, if they are of the United States of America, born and raised in the United States, working in the United States, went to college and high school and elementary school and junior high school in the United States, they have all these things going for them. Why, when they go to court, you don't hear them say you're getting a life sentence without being able to vote? Voting is not even a mention in the courtroom when they're sentenced. Voting is not even a mention at all, except for the fact that prisoners cannot vote now. So I get, if people are wanting to help, I think that might be another way to help too. Contact these legislative members. Some of them may be afraid to allow prisoners to vote because they are not for the cause, and the prisoners probably would vote for political figures that are for the cause. And our political figures have to realize it's not just the prisoners who vote or who are not voting. When they have family out there, family members and friends and advocates out there who are for the cause for prison reform, those are the ones that are going to vote for the politicians that are for the cause, that are trying to make a difference for the prisoners and their families as well. Those are the ones that are going to be their stronghold. They have to think about these things, because it's not just the almost 2.5 million prisoners in the United States that they're depriving of voting, but it's the 2.5 million prisoners, families and friends and other advocates who are advocating for these prisoners and their families who are also going to be voting, and they're not going to be voting for any politician that is strongly against prison reform. So that might be another area where people can help. They can find
that's
their legislative.
That's a very good idea.
They can contact their legislative members just by going on the internet and typing in legislative for whatever state they're from. And when they type in whatever state they're from, they're going to pull up all these names, and it's going to pull up their contact emails, their phone numbers, everything. So anyone that doesn't even know how to go about it can go about it just by typing in legislative members for Massachusetts or legislative members for Mississippi or Missouri or New York or California, and it'll pull up the legislative members in their area. Then they can start making those calls, massive emails, letter writing.
Absolutely. That's a very good idea. And, you know, I think that we can incorporate that in with the National Day of Freedom and Justice. Maybe we can do a big call to action the entire week of, the entire week before and the entire week after. We can do this national call to action where we will actually list all the information for them, and all they'll have to do is click on a link and go there and put in their message. And we could even do, you know, maybe some pre-written messages if they just want to share the same information. It's very important that people participate and vote, and the people that are incarcerated should never lose their rights to vote. They are still citizens.
That's
regardless. Right. Regardless, they are still citizens, and they should always retain that vote. that voter's right. Absolutely. I fully support that.
I think that's an excellent idea you have, too, about putting it on your site. And that way people can see and they can take the information and run with it.
Right. Yeah, we'll work on that. We'll get started on that as soon as possible because it is very important. And, you know, I have talked to so many leaders of different ethnicities and races and things. And, you know, what I hear over and over, and it's not to pinpoint or point fingers, but I hear, well, you know, the black community that are in the facilities, they don't vote. Okay? So why don't we teach them to vote?
Exactly.
You know, so many people aren't aware that they need to, that their vote counts. And everybody's vote counts. Everybody's vote counts. And we need to put the pressure on our legislators. We do. We need to put the pressure on them. You know, what is your stance on criminal justice reform? And what are you going to do for us? If you're elected into office, what are you going to do for us? And I think that would make a big difference in how many legislatives or delegates, you know, will actually get involved with the criminal justice reform.
Yeah. I know that, again, in Massachusetts, there are some politicians working on the prison reform and working on the issues. And I know it's probably going around the country, but there are a lot of politicians that are still not on board with it. And unfortunately, there's some that are trying to bring back the death penalty. So to me,
Right. Again,
we're in a country that it's about vengeance, it's about retaliation, it's about corruption, it's about everything but. And when we have lawyers and politicians who are corrupt, who are in the business of trying to prevent positive changes, then we can't work with them. We have to look at voting for and encouraging, like you say, people of color need to get out there and vote because that's the problem is out there all the time. People of color, any of us of color that are concerned with the injustice that's going on with our races, they're the ones that should be out there before even the Caucasian. They're the ones that should be getting more involved and as quick as involved. So this protest you're putting on, this is a protest or a rally that everybody, all races, especially people of color, should be a part of. And I hope that they will get on board. They need to get out there and they need to register to vote if they haven't already.
Right.
I have to say this once again, Janet, and I've said this before in previous. One of the things is if we're going to complain, people of color are going to complain about the injustice done by the white man, then they need to look at the injustice that they're doing to one another. And this is a major problem. I went to Ghana, West Africa, years ago in my travels. And one of the things the people there said, the natives there said, that the African Americans go to their country and they spend their money like they're coming from America, like the white man. They go to just the tourist attractions. They said they don't even try to learn about their own culture by going into the villages. So this is what I'm talking about. When people of color complain about the races and the injustice that's going on in their races, their communities, they need to start respecting one another. And sometimes we have people of color that make it to the top, and then they forget the ones behind them. I had spoken to a friend, Bridges for Change in Pennsylvania, Gerald Bowlings, one time, talked to someone about helping a prisoner. And this person, a black person, is going to start saying, oh, they're all alike. They're all a bunch of hoods. They're all a bunch, talking against all prisoners. He was stereotyping. And this is something I don't agree with. I don't tolerate. Because no prisoner, white, black, brown, beige, red, whatever the color, even yellow, no prisoner should be stereotyped because every situation is different. Every circumstance is different. And there's a lot of people out in the community that have caused people to go to prison because of their own lies, their own deceit, their own deception. They have caused it, not only caused them to go to prison, but once that person has committed an offense, and if it's a fatal one, against that person's family, then that person can blame themselves as much as the blame that's going into that person that did the crime. And so we need to stop stereotyping, and we need to look at every situation differently. But people of color need to come together, not think that they're better than their own peers, and then complain because a white man is mistreating them.
Right, right. They're all very valid points that you're making. And, you know, there's something that I just feel I really want to talk about, too, is the fact of when someone gets a conviction and that's on the record, that is secondary and tertiary punishments, because it's on the record. It prevents them from adequate housing a lot of times. It prevents them from real substantial employment. My group fully supports if after a certain amount of time, after an offender is released, and they've done their time on their probation, they haven't committed any more crimes, they've shown true reform, we want their records either sealed or expunged so that they don't continue, you know, with this discrimination against them. They should not receive a life sentence of discrimination for something that they did when they were 18 years old.
Exactly. And, you know, that's another problem. So I'm glad you brought that up. There are men, female and male prisoners, I mean former offenders, who have spoken about coming out and being on probation or parole for life. I have never, I can't imagine anybody serving their time, their years in prison, and then coming out only to find out that they're still on probation and have to report to a probation officer for the rest of their lives. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. That's a lifelong sentence. You know, it could be, you know, something that has a 2 or 3 year sentence. They serve their time, they've paid their dues, and if they don't go on to commit any more crimes during their, you know, it should be a minimal amount of probation time, if any. You know, I think Mississippi has a 5 year cap on the probation, but the thing is, they can be on probation for one thing and then be on probation for something else. So we have to make sure that everything runs concurrent rather than them stacking it and running stuff consecutively. That's going to make them be on probation for up to 10 years or longer, like you're talking about. That's a 10-year sentence on a 2-year crime.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And then there's cases where a crime might have happened in one state and they're shipping the person to another state. And how do you fight your case if you're in another state? It's difficult. You know, and as you mentioned, the Corey has prevented so many people from being successful after they come out. Because as Tom Dormer was saying the other day too, and you mentioned it, prisoners come out, they have this Corey label. And then they try to get jobs, and they can't get jobs because they see that they've had a Corey, that they've been incarcerated. And even though they come out and they're ready to, they're motivated, they're productive, but they don't get that opportunity.
Right, right. And so that's another thing that we work on. You know, we try to approach things from every direction and every angle. So we have compiled a list of certain businesses that will hire people with a record. But you know, the thing is, if you're a male, most of the jobs available to you as having a record is going to be construction. If you're disabled and you can't do construction, then you don't have any options. Most of the jobs for both male and female, especially, is fast food. You know, how can you make a sustainable living working at a fast food restaurant? It can't be done. And so in companies investing in and employing people with a record, that not only helps that person, but it helps the economy, because then that person can make what they need to make, hopefully, to sustain an adequate living and not have to rely on the government for assistance.
Exactly.
So there's so many different angles, you know, there's so many different angles and issues that need to be addressed across the board. The conspiracy thing, that's another huge thing that we really want to see changes in the laws about. People who talk about committing a crime are getting life, while the people that actually commit the crime are done in 5 years and they get out and, you know, they go on about their lives. But these ghost drug charges and these conspiracy charges are just absolutely filling up our prisons, and is one of the big reasons for the mass incarceration that we have right now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not
That's
to mention
bad.
The, yeah, the mandatory minimum laws, you know. Even judges I've spoken to are against the mandatory minimum laws because it doesn't give them the jurisdiction to be able to say, you know, I understand the circumstances around your crime, you know, and I can give you a sentence that is fair for your crime, instead of saying, well, you know, there's a mandatory 20-year sentence on this, and I have to sentence you to 20 years.
Yeah, it doesn't give them an option.
Right, right. And, you know, you know, that all falls into the category of stereotyping, because if somebody goes into a convenience store and they steal $20 worth of stuff, they're still guilty of theft, but that doesn't mean that they've gone in and harmed somebody in the process. And, you know, it does not give their particular case the individualism that it deserves.
Yeah.
So
We need to really push for the consistency that needs to occur in these prisons and the courts. And like you say, the conspiracy, also the prosecutorial injustice, that's another major issue, because prosecutors have been known to lie, to withhold evidence. There was a prosecutor years ago that actually, when the time came before the trial, he actually was going to bring into court people who knew the defendant, who knew the defendant to be a good person. And the prosecutors had scheduled to have these people on as witnesses on the side of the prosecutor. When they found out just before the trial, they found out that these people, they only had good to say about this offender. So they decided not to call them. But yet it was too late for the lawyers, the defendant's lawyers, to call them, because the trial had already started. So this was another thing that really struck me strange, is that how prosecutors will manipulate witnesses. They will manipulate the system to win a case, even though that they know that the person that they're doing this against is not the person that they're claiming he is or she is as a bad person. A lot of good people
right.
have been sent to prison because of prosecutors lying and withholding evidence and tampering with the evidence and bringing in fake witnesses or false witnesses.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be it's all in a ploy to keep those win rates high, and that's why we have so many people being coerced into accepting these outrageous plea arrangements. You know, if just so they can keep their win rates high, they're not actually winning. You know, here in the county that I'm in, they have a 98% win rate. Well, if you look at it, 80-something percent of those are actually coerced plea agreements. They're not winning anything. They're scaring people and using their scare tactics to get people to commit to a crime that sometimes they haven't even done. But they will tell them, either you accept this plea deal or, you know, you're looking at life. So they're afraid and they don't know any better. And, you know, the sad truth is most of the time if the people don't accept a plea deal, they do get life. That's just the sad truth. There's so many cases that we are working on right now that have that same situation. Tracy Fagan, the person who's incarcerated who asked me to do this event, you know, he went to trial. He did not accept a plea deal. They spent thousands and thousands of dollars on this attorney. And basically, when it came down to push and shove, the attorney threw him under the bus. And the actual kingpins, like I said, they I think the most any of them served was 7 years. And he got life because he talked about doing something.
That's what I'm talking about. It's ridiculous. People are serving life sentences. And the plea... I have to mention the plea. When you mention the plea dealings, so many innocent people are in prison because they're told they don't stand a chance. So they have to admit that they're guilty. But if they admit they're guilty, then they'll get a short sentence. But then once they get in prison, it's hard to get out because they've already admitted to a crime, whether they committed it or not. This plea bargaining and plea deals to me is ridiculous. I don't think people should have it. I think they should do away with plea bargains unless the person actually committed the crime.
Right. And you know, the thing about the plea bargains is, depending on which state you're in, most states will say, you know, this is the sentence we'll recommend you get. But that doesn't mean they're going to get that exact sentence. There's another case that I've been working on. The guy was 18 years old. His name's Christopher Bennett, and he walked in on his stepdad raping his 5-year-old sister, and he shot and killed him. You know, and the story goes on way deeper than that.
Janet, I'd like to interrupt you for a minute. I want you to hear from a prisoner what they encounter while they are incarcerated. John, can you please tell us what you have been going through and others have been going through where you are? Wait a minute. Let me turn the volume up. Okay, go ahead.
No.
Especially since you've been in the cells 23 hours a day, what are the feelings that you and other prisoners have gone through?
Environment where the child is taught right and wrong, or, you know, it's not out in a situation where all he sees is violence and he's being tormented and abused all the time, 9 times out of 10, he becomes an abuser himself. So basically, that's what they're doing to the prisoners here. I feel sad for the people on the outside because, you know, what awaits them is they're going to release a lot of these guys and, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but it's really sad. There's no common sense, really. Even if you don't really feel as about a child, but even with an animal, if you want to raise a dog correctly, you don't beat the dog. You don't abuse the dog. You keep a dog in a cage, you know, 22 hours a day or 23 hours a day. You know, you give the dog some kind of external stimulus. You make sure the dog's well fed. You have the dog, train the dog, give him educational experiences. And, you don't surround him with violence. Otherwise, you know what? You know, you have a pit bull, you create a pit bull if that happens. So it's that. I couldn't really describe it to you unless you're actually in this kind of environment. It's that.
Now, John, how many times have you been incarcerated?
This is my first time. I've never been arrested before. It's my first time ever being arrested. Never committing a crime. It was unfortunate. I know I did wrong. But at the time, I just was not thinking clearly. And I felt that, you know, my life was over at that point. And all the negative sides of society, I felt that I internalized them. And I had really no hope for the future. So, you know, I was abused and everything. So, and then now, for that one crime, I'm going to spend the rest of my life in this situation. Much rather sad.
And what were you doing prior to the depression?
Well, I was in college, and I just finished basically finishing wrapping up college. And, a person that I had trusted, basically, and I believed it tore me down and basically harped on all my weaknesses. All the feelings of self-doubt and feelings of worthlessness, magnified those. And I didn't believe in that. I believe that there was enough to be a worse than a second-class citizen. People would view me as worthless. And so I internalized that, and I became worthless. I became what that person wanted me to be, unfortunately. Again, it's like I looking back, I've been in prison for 24 years now, so I knew what was wrong, but the longer that I'm in prison, the less I remember myself before, the less I remember what society is, what humanity is. All I know now is on a daily basis is, I'm being treated like an animal. And it's that I've basically forgot that part of life, of being, you know, kind and compassionate. All I know now is, I'm supposed to be locked in a cell, and that's it. That's what I deserve. And again, the crime is 27 years ago, 28 years ago. So a lot of it I don't really remember. So kind of you're punishing me now. I understand that the victims no longer with us, and I understand that. I feel bad for that. I mean, I think it was that one of the same tokens. So, how much do you want me to pay? I mean, if it makes everyone feel better locking me away for the rest of my life, that's fine, but it's all a question of who you're afraid of and who you're angry at. If you're angry at me, okay? But if you're fearful of me, I can pose you no harm. So I just like to be left alone, you know, either leave the country or just be in the countryside or something away from everybody. That's all the prison taught me is not to trust people. Not to trust people, especially people who are being by the state. They basically torture you. Fact.
And what Janet Lee is with us, she is the coordinator of the National Day of Freedom for Justice and the National Day of Freedom and Justice. And what would you want her to know that maybe she could incorporate into this rally that she's having?
Basically, I think everyone out there is fighting 1,000 different causes in 1,000 different directions. You know, a rally is not going to do anything. You need to do is, if you want to help prisoners out, give us our voting rights back. Give us our voice back. Because, you know, American citizens, we always talk about freedoms, and yet we're quick to take away freedoms from the most vulnerable. You know, like we had a voice, and if we had a voice, at least we feel connected to society. But you can have all the marches and rallies and flyers and speeches that you want, but that's not doing prisoners any good. So the only thing that prisoners need is our voice. Our voice back for 200 years, we can vote. Destroy the country. We voted some Democrat, some Republican, you know, some independent. your guests to be out there rallying and protesting for us, because we can basically have our vote and we can do it ourselves with our vote. You know, we wouldn't need her, and she could go on with her life and do something productive instead of, you know, trying to rally and march. We just need our voting rights, and we need a voice. I mean, if this was 30 years ago, I could have been a part of society. I could have been voting and going on the weekend furloughs and working in society, paying taxes, and they destroyed that for 200 years, because this could go on for those, for 200 years, because this could vote, you know. And now, society, they want to blame presidents for everything, but crime really hasn't changed. Crime has been around Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, you know, so it seems like the other people nowadays, they seem that they know what's best, you know, how to punish people, but punishment doesn't do anything. If you look at some countries like Norway or the Scandinavian countries, European countries, they have a lesser citizenship rate. But yet they treat their
Now, Janet, do you have any questions for John?
I can't hear him very well, but I do want to tell him that I can completely understand the despair and the hopelessness within the facilities, and I want to let them know that there are people out here fighting for their rights, to include their voting rights, most especially. And don't give up. Keep fighting. And we are fighting for you out here. We feel your pain. And it is our goal to get you your voting rights back.
Right. But that should be the only thing you should be fighting for, because that's when you put a different, you direct your energy to different causes. You know, you don't have the strength needed for that one cause. So the main thing is getting our voting rights back. As far as feeling the prisoner's pain, I don't think anyone on the outside can really feel that pain. Unfortunately, some prisoners have succumbed to that pain and committed suicide. When the NFL football player Aaron Hernandez was here a few years ago, he committed suicide, and it was all over the news, all over the national news. And that was one suicide. Since then, there's been dozens. And it's been silent out there. I understand that the prisoner advocates, you know, they are fighting for us, but really, no one can really feel the prisoner's pain until they've been in their shoes. They've lost some of their love. They have no connection over there. Some prisoners were abusers. I mean, prisoners, and we're not all the same. See, prisoners, you're talking in Massachusetts, you know, 17,000 different individuals. So to say you feel an individual or prisoner's pain, it's impossible, because there's 17,000 ways of that pain. So, I mean, I appreciate at least you trying, you know, and at least, you know, there's not enough of you out there, you know, even thinking about us as human beings, but I appreciate you at least feeling. But again, no one out there really knows until they've been in the situation. And it's hard, but you know, thank you for at least trying. Thank you for at least going on
This is one voice for many voices, Janet, that have felt helpless and hopeless. This is one voice for many voices that are talking about the pain that they're going through in the prison. And since the coronavirus, it's been even worse, because they've been locked in cells for 23 hours a day or 24 hours a day. They're let out now. After this call, he won't be out again until tomorrow sometime. And this is a sad situation, because these prisoners have got to have. But the thing is, Janet has been working on not only the voting rights, but also the abuses going on in the prisons, the things that are going on in the prison. And we just had another caller come in, too. And I believe it might be Tom Dormer, who was incarcerated at one time as well. Caller, state your name. We may be having a problem with the voice. But, Janet, can you explain to John a little bit about what the march is going to be about again?
Yes, I can. And, you know, it's not just me, but there are a lot of the people that are organizing actually have been released from prison and have served time, you know, some people as much as 40 years already. And so in their experiences and telling us what's going on, that helps us to know what we're fighting for. Plus, I also talk to inmates every single day, all hours of the night. I'm very open to hearing, you know, what's going on in these facilities. I get pictures, I get videos, stuff like that, so we know what to fight for. And basically, we are fighting for human rights, the right to vote, the right to live in a humane environment, the right to your education, your freedom to practice your religion, the right to proper, appropriate, and timely medical care, you know, the nutrition values, and you know, just all the injustices that have been brought to us or have been brought to light to us by formerly and presently incarcerated. Those issues, we want to address them all. You know, not to include the laws that we want to get changed, you know, with the mandatory minimums, and we're pushing for clemencies and commutations and, you know, compassionate releases, especially during this time of COVID.
And, you know, these things...
All those words you just mentioned, the dirty words to politicians and the people in society, the dirty words as soon as you mentioned them.
Well, you know what, the politicians, there's a lot of politicians working on it, but there are people, and there are others, and someone else just came on. Who's the caller? State your name.
This is Chinupa.
Chinupa. We have John on the phone from one of the prisons in Massachusetts. Can you talk about the Sioux Indians and what the injustice is going on out there as well?
You know, one of the whole, you know, understandings behind the prison system draws more of a negative intention when the BOP and the Department of Corrections and all them really make a scenario where the population of the indigenous people were unorthodoxly, you know, at a high minimum. Well, that's a lie, because South Dakota and the federal institutions, whether it's South Dakota, North Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, Nebraska, Kansas, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, any place within the reservations that got a high percentage of, you know, reservation population are all molecule. Why do I say molecule? Because the Department of Corrections and the Bureau of Prison marginalized the capacity of the said Native people that are incarcerated because of crimes against humanity. When you deplete a population of the said reservation, the people in general that listen today to today's show need to understand one thing. When you practice and perfect rules and regulations to neutralize the well-being of a human being, you'll kill him. So when you kill him, he can't function in a normal, you know, pronunciation where he can get a job, fix fence, cut wood, haul water, things that are essential on the reservation, go hunt for his livelihood to feed his family and so forth, because of the unemployment structure in this country. When you have a criminal record, you know, any type of margin of a record, whether it's assault, drug paraphernalia, debauching children, all of these things were created by white supremacy, white America, white think. Nobody, and I repeat, in the mainstream media or even any radio shows, target the problem of white supremacy, and that's where it's created from. When you look at corporations that are extracting oil and certain resources from the earth, they have all of their, you know, employment structures in place where they utilize alcohol and drugs to bring these people of color in and turn them into, you know, God-forsaken prostitutes, then throw them back out there when they're addicted to these paraphernalias and this alcohol beverage, so they don't know how to function. Then when they try to go home to the reservations, they can't adapt because there's no drugs, there's no alcohol. They got to go elsewhere and bring it in, then impose that same margin back onto the tribal people. So what does that tell the rest of the American public? That we Indians and many other people of color are lazy, we're drunken Indians, we're just dope fiends. And this is what America has done to everybody, even the rural cities. When you look at Chicago, New York, Florida, Kansas City, any other, you know, Dayton, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, all of these cities that have a high population of people of color. Even Detroit, Michigan is a prime example. So when you look at what America does, they neutralize them human rights because they don't want people to wake up and think freely and think how corrupted this system is. And that's where the problem lies. And let me tell you, Sister Leona, nobody's blaming white America. And I will it back to you.
That's the problem. But, you know, we do have a lot of, like, with Janet talking about these people coming together. If we notice now, it's not, she's putting on a rally for the nation, and she's gotten all these responses from other countries. So people are watching America. They're watching all the injustice going on in the prison system. They're watching the injustice going on in the communities. They want to join forces, and it's a shame. When we have all these people from other countries wanting to join forces with all these rallies and demonstrations because they know themselves that this is injustice. Just, Janet, we were talking the other day about the most humane prisons in the world, in Norway. And I've been interviewing Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands, who's been talking about the prison system there being successful. They don't have mass incarceration. They don't have life without parole. They don't have all these harsh places in their housing. Is not in steel bars and walls and cement, but the housing is in normal housing like dormitories. So these are the things. And John has a minute left, so I'd like to have him say a few things before he goes. John?
Well, yeah, I'd like to start at the beginning. You have your caller from the land of the Lakotas. And, you know, when the Europeans first came over here, they were going to starve and they weren't going to make it to that first link. But the First Nations of the Wampanoag and the natives, they showed them how to hunt. We survived that first winter, and what did we do? We murdered them and stole their land. And that's what this country founded on. And 435 treaties made to the First Nations broke them all. So that just shows you from the beginning we had to start giving them their sovereignty. We're quick to talk about China and the Uyghurs and you know, political rights all over the world, but you know, look in the mirror. You know, this is what our tax dollars, what people's tax dollars, what our so-called peace-loving people. What we, you know, we're standing for, even though we're silent, we're standing with them with our silence.
Yes.
So apologize for the call of them.
Thank you for using.
I'd like to thank you for calling. Okay, we lost him, but that's the voice from one of the prisoners, and it's speaking for a lot of prisoners. They're just frustrated. They're feeling hopeless. And Chinupa, he heard you 100%. Janet, this is why. What you're doing with this rally is awesome. Hopefully it's okay. It is. Hold on.
Hello, this is prepaid collect call.
Okay.
Massachusetts Department of Corrections. This call is future recording as monitoring to accept charges. Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation.
Okay, he can finish up now. Okay, John, you want to finish what you were saying? Chinupa, you have anything to respond to that?
Yes, one of the things that I will respond to that is that, okay, here's a good example of how, you know, the system breaks down the normal pronunciation of somebody, and I mean somebody. I'm only using that as a term to describe who we are, as a somebody. People of color in a larger margin, okay, are subjugated to colonial abuse, whether they're in a county jail, a small detention center for the youth, and otherwise. Now, today, in response to what this brother was talking about, we just saw law enforcement training their dogs to sniff out drugs, okay? Well, that wasn't the norm. You know what they were doing? They were training these dogs to attack Native people if they resist or if they were under some type of scrutiny of public surveillance, okay? So we saw that. So I questioned them. I questioned the officer doing this. because they had wall-to-wall, you know, county and city police and state troopers abroad watching these dogs do this. And the officer did admit, we haven't got to that yet, but we will. What does that tell the rest of humanity? You see, rights are being violated day in and day out. And the only way we can combat that is just like what this young lady's trying to do, unite with people of color. People of color have to remind ourselves where we came from. This goes clear back even to slavery. Don't ever forget, America, Native people were the first slaves to any type of inhabitant before my African people were brought aboard. So back to all this criminal, you know, behavior that goes on in America, you will see that no one, and even the white race, will never do this. They want to come close to Native people or any ethnic person of color to seek refuge because they cannot stand up to the corruption and the behavior of their own people. Now, I remember my grandfather once telling me this. Incarcerate chickens, dogs, buffalo, cats, anything of four-legged or winged pronunciation, and you will see that they will rebel to captivity, and eventually they'll find a way out. Well, this is what they're doing to the two-legged, we human beings. And so, yes, you can marginalize by using physical abuse in any type of penal complex. What I'm referring to is the maximum security penitentiary level. And one of the biggest scrutinies that they're doing right now, and this brother can vouch this with me, they're also using pills to neutralize a person's behavior when, in fact, they don't work. That's what keeps these pharmaceuticals continuously to create some type of, you know, tablet that neutralizes the well-being of a said person that's struggling to remain free inside. And so to combat that, as I said in the last show that you were on, if all of us can come together and get these other countries that have an issue with America, then and only then can we solve this problem and have America arrested and charged for all of these heinous behaviors through ethnic cleansing, genocide, propatriot fundamental practice. Nobody has heard the term propatriot fundamental practice. Has anybody in the listening audience heard the term propatriot fundamental practice? Gets quiet in it.
Yeah.
But we know genocide, right? Do we all know of genocide? Do we all agree on genocide?
Yes.
Okay. Propatriate is stronger than genocide. Genocide creates half-breeds, creates people with white supremacy. Propatriate fundamental practice is a world term that they use over in the world courts where you annihilate a race and that race cannot reproduce itself. More stronger. And that's what those other countries are looking to what America has done. America has got rid of so many different animal species through propatriate fundamental practice. And that's how they clone animals and other. They're trying to even clone human beings. Think about that. And eventually if these evil, you know, SOBs are successfully to encounter that, seriously, they're going to create something that their TVs are pronouncing every day. They make these shows to show you that they're capable of doing it. And it's going to happen if we don't bring them to justice. And I will it back to you. And brother, thank you for that question.
He said thank you for that question. And I want to say one thing real quickly, too. I was in talking mentioned this before about doing a pilot project with these other countries that are successful with the penal system. This is something I want to speak about Tuesday when I interviewed Miriam Jacobs from the Netherlands, but also I want to try to bring someone on from Norway in hopes that we can try to get some discussion on that at another time to talk about pilot projects where we can actually send people over from the prisons, a few people at a time, just to see what the successes are with these individuals. The United States, we know in this country about these injustices, and they know these other countries are successful, and I don't know why they're not trying to follow suit in the way that they're doing things. But again, Janet, we're going to have you on again because these discussions have been really interesting, and we've been taking up time, too, from the discussion about the rally. But again, there's so many organizations right now and so many groups coming together. And I'm hoping that we see, and I know that August 21st, right up until September, there's going to be a lot of activities going on around the world with these issues about the penal system and about the injustices. So I'm kind of really excited about it. And I'd like to let everybody finish talking about whatever's going on and what their roles are and everything else. John, do you have any more questions?
I love these conversations. They really bring up, you know, those of us, there are so many people who don't know. And so the more we talk about it, the more we're bringing it to the public eye, and the more people we can get fighting, you know, to right these wrongs.
Exactly. And for those of you that came on later, Janet and I were talking earlier about the people that are not going to be a part of the rally to be able to contact their legislative members around the country for their own states and actually start talking to them about the voting rights, about the injustices, and actually having them go into these prisons and do some monitoring themselves and meeting with the prisoners. Janet is going to be putting all this information on her website so everyone will be able to get the names and numbers and everything else. Janet, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, what we're going to do, I think, is we're going to do a call to action. And what that is when we post the information, we will post the email addresses, the phone numbers for all of the people and all the politicians that we can vote, we can email them, you know, our concerns. We will also draw up some, you know, kind of baseline letters. If you don't want to use your own wording or whatever, you can just send the same letter. But this is something we're going to do as a call to action. We get a really good response with the call of actions. You know, we get thousands of people calling and emailing and stuff with these. So I want to run this call of action a week prior to the National Day of Freedom and Justice event and a week after.
Yeah, and they, I don't know the name of the other group. There was, there's been so many groups coming together around that time, but there's one on Facebook that they're talking about, like I said, from the 21st of September to the 9th of, 21st of August to the 9th of September. But it seems like people are coming together all over the world, and especially in this country. And Chinupa, you were talking about connecting with Janet, and she said that she needed your contact information again. So hopefully I can either send it to her or you can give it to her now or at another time.
Yeah, my phone number, you can reach me. Remember, I'm computer illiterate. Let's get that real clear for a little listening audience. Chinupa is a computer illiterate person. I don't want to be part of the machine. The machine is what controls people, and it neutralizes your spirit to connect with freedom, and I don't want that. So you can reach me at 605-517-1547 or 605-517-2621. Both phone numbers, man, will link to who I am and where I'm at and what I'm doing. And I will say this, you know, to everyone. I would love to participate in this. Right now I got to go towards Nebraska here at the discretion of some of the inmates that are going through an ordeal down there because they cannot get released on parole when it's even a family matter if somebody, you know, had passed away and so forth. You see, that's the thing that a lot of people are forgetting, but white America has given that privilege to their own people, people that will more or less seek that unhealthy predicament. And the brother that was, you know, asking those questions and stuff, all the brothers that are in the penal complex where he called from, let them know Chinupa Gruha Money of the Strong Heart Warriors Society is not forgetting anybody, male or female or even children, boys or girls that are locked up and removed from their family. We are still in the crisis of fighting this thing. And one day, that day's coming, I can smile it in the air, that we will bring some accountability of some strong justice against white America. And that's how we're going to change this. And the only way you're going to change it is doing something positive like we're all doing today on today's show. And I will it back to you, Leona.
Very good. Very good. I'd like to know, is it Tom that's on the line with on the air with us as well? 406? John, do you have any questions?
No, it's just nice to hear that people have this energy. You know, if anyone out there is listening, we'll say something we would read as far as being patriotic, loving the country, stability being there. allegiance and serving our country. You know, when you come to prison, you realize it's all a lie. It's all a big lie. And it's sad. Our country has so much potential. And, you know, just when you come to prison, destruction and torture. And it's sad. It's really, you know, yeah, I vote for Christ.
And again, as I said, John is a first-time offender, and he felt like at the time of his crime, he felt that he didn't belong in this country. He didn't have a place. He didn't have a place to fit in. So he actually left the country, which increased the problem. Although it was dismissed in court, he did get a life without parole for a first offense. But sometimes that's the way that we're made to feel in America. We're made to feel as though we don't belong, and some people will try to fit in somewhere else if they can't fit in their own country. But they still have their voting rights, and this is something we really need to focus on. And again, Janet, having this rally, in addition to all these other demonstrations going on around the world, as Chinupa said, hopefully we're going to see some changes finally.
Yeah, we're definitely going to keep pushing from every angle, every direction. We'll work with anybody and everybody to make a change for everybody.
And I have to add one more thing, Janet. As far as Caucasians, the white man goes, there are white people all over this country that are still having that racist attitude. But these demonstrations could not have been put on alone without the help of a lot of the whites that are involved with what you're doing, with what others are doing. It's beautiful to see, because we're seeing more and more Caucasians seeing the problem in this country, seeing the injustices, seeing the need to unite to make a change. And this is what we all need to do, is to unite. Unfortunately, our loved ones and our prisoners inside, they cannot be out to help us in that area, but they are working on trying to get some prisoners motivated enough to join forces in whatever way they can inside, whether it be writing letters, whether it be uniting to have a day of a national day of protest or whatever, the same day that this is going to be taking place, just to have a stay in whatever it might be. But there are so many ways that everybody can help in all of this and make a change. We've got so many people on the outside right now that want to do this, and we're hoping by the 22nd of August, we're going to see this place really active with all kinds of protests and rallies and changes.
Right, absolutely, yeah. I've been amazed at the people who are interested and who are getting involved. You know, we do have some delegates. We do have some politicians. We have many, many preachers and school teachers. And, you know, it's not just the, as people do stereotype, it's not just people from the hood or people from the trailer park or whatever. There are some very influential people who realize this is a problem. And it doesn't just affect, you know, people in certain neighborhoods or anything like that. It's affecting everybody, whether you're a taxpayer or whether you have somebody in the system. Of course, you're more affected by that, but everybody in the United States right now, I think, are given a huge injustice, and we need to stand up as Americans, and we need to say we're tired, and we need to take our government back. We need to fight for what's right.
Exactly. I think we need to push for independent investigators to go into the prisons randomly and actually see what's going on, because a lot of times there's no oversight at all. There's no one going into the prisons. There's no one talking with the prisoners until a tragedy happens or riots happen. And then, we have the media reporting one-sided stories. This is a major issue with the media as well. Last night, I was listening to the television when they were talking about three or four police officers that were stabbed by one man in Saugus, Massachusetts. And what they said was multiple, like it was some kind of real major, major thing. They were stabbed and sent to the hospital, but they were released. But these are issues that people around the country now are just so afraid of law enforcement. They're so afraid of all these people that are in uniforms in power, because they're using, they're abusing their power, as we can see with our national leader. But the thing is, we need to make a change. And like you say, this is the time. This is the time. A lot of people are coming together, and this is good. Many issues do
right.
need to be addressed. Many issues do. The abuse, like the human rights, as you mentioned, civil rights, these abuses in the prisons and the communities are just as important as the voting rights. And we need to stop these abuses before it turns out to be worse. Suicides in the prisons are escalating. Hopelessness, helplessness, these things are escalating in the prisons, and it needs to stop.
It absolutely does, and you're so right about the media misrepresenting or, you know, not telling the full story. Just the other day, and they had the riot at Ware's, at the Ware facility in Georgia. You know, they were saying on the news at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, this is all under control, you know, all this stuff. Well, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was still receiving videos of stuff that was going on inside that facility. And so they were live, so they weren't pre-recorded. They were still happening at 3 o'clock. And the news was trying to minimize what was going on, but the things that they weren't showing were more CO abuse is basically what it boils down to. And the people that were shot were laying there, and they were not getting medical treatment. So the media plays a huge part in downplaying what is actually going on inside these facilities. And so we, as the public, we need to bring these things to light. We need to let everybody know what's going on.
Exactly. There's a one of the advocates had given me the name of Ted Daniels with Fox 25 News.
You have 1 minute left.
And I actually emailed him and contacted him. He's supposed to be in an investigative unit, right, has done nothing whatsoever. So the advocate actually asked me the other day if I had heard. She said, we have to keep pushing it, because these people in the media, they claim to be investigative, but they don't want to investigate the things that they need to investigate or even discuss it. If it's in law enforcement, they'll discuss it. If it's the other way around, you don't hear anything about it. John, you're going to be leaving us again soon. Do you have anything to say before you get disconnected again?
No, I just the media is part of the problem. Equal responsibility.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I fight everyone on. Thank you.
Well, it's going to be, like I said, August 22nd and around the August and September, there's going to be a lot of activity going on. And I just appreciate all these people that are coming together, these advocates and loved ones of the incarcerated coming together
Thank
to
you.
Make a change.
Secure us. Goodbye.
So we have now 12 minutes left. So if anything more is being said, I'd welcome it, because right now I think at least one prisoner, and he will be the voice for others, will let them know that there are people on the outside that are acting on their behalf. They are feeling helpless right now, especially with this coronavirus. It's worse than ever, because there is no oversight. These prisoners are being abused more. They're being kept in their cells like animals, caged in animals 23 hours a day. A lot of them don't have their property. They don't have their books. They don't have their television. They're trying to keep their sanity. And these are issues that need to be addressed quickly, because these people, their mental state is at very much at risk right now.
It absolutely is. And just to touch base on the conditions with the COVID, you know, so many people have this misconception of, oh, they're already quarantined. They're safe. That is could not be farther from the truth. They're at more risk because they can't social distance, because they don't have the cleaning supplies, the hand sanitizers, and most, you know, a lot of them don't even have proper PPE, such as masks and things like that. If right now, most if not all of the facilities have been closed down to outside visitors. So the cases are being bought in by the workers. the workers, either they're negligent, they're not given the appropriate PPE, they're not doing the hand washing, whatever. They are exposing our people to this disease, and it spreads like wildfire. Then they don't have the appropriate medical care that's needed for them, you know, if they contract it. I've had several clients that I've been working with that have actually passed away from the COVID. And I've talked to others, you know, who have said, please let everybody know this COVID is real. If you don't believe it's real, step inside a prison and you will see. Too many of our people are sick. Too many of our people are not being protected. And in the bylaws of the prisons, the first thing that it states is that they are to provide protection and safety for our people, and they're failing miserably. And we need to hold them accountable for that.
Exactly. And you're right. As being brought in from the workers themselves, they're out in the communities. They're in their family home. They're in their stores. They're all over the place. And then they go into the prisons. And that's it's like I mentioned with the drugs. Families, people all over the place, family and friends going to visit their loved ones were always searched, and they had the dog sniffing in some cases, and talking about families and friends bringing in the drugs. But yet there's prisoners in the prison system still getting high, and no one's been allowed to visit for months and months. So where are the drugs coming from? That too is coming in from the employees.
Exactly. That's where the majority of the contraband does come from the employees bringing it in. You know, we've had several cases of people ODing here recently and actually dying from the drugs that the employees are bringing in because families aren't doing it. Families aren't there. And the only people on the campus besides the people who are behind the walls are the employees.
Exactly. Now, Chinupa, are you still on with us?
Yes, I am.
We had interviewed you on the day that I believe it was the president was in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking then about something about the injustice that was going on then at that time.
You know, what I was referring to then when president of a fake country that was, you know, in our treaty territory, I was talking about one of the greatest things that has never been tested in America. States and the population of people of color need to file genocide complaints within that state. All of us can do it. The same way I ordered and I ordered tribal presidents and I urged tribal membership in every reservation in North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, and Nebraska to file a suit against, you know, the federal government for all of these illegal atrocities that are befalling us. Now, keep in mind, election time's a few months away. We need to get prepared for what they're going to do again. You see, this is why this voting polls are people are trying to send ballots in through computer. Nah. Don't ever forget what they did to the late brother Dick Gregory, a good brother of mine. Me and him got together in Ferguson when they did that, you know, stuff to the young brother down there and so forth. But Dick had told me that many years ago he won the presidency because they goofed in their machines, their voting machines. And America is capable of doing that. And we need to really prepare for what's coming because there's something going on that nobody's talking about. Why would these cops in this town called Rapid City, South Dakota, train these dogs to attack human beings? So somebody got wind of it saying that they were training those dogs to use against the indigenous people. So I confronted the man. I sure did. Today, this morning. And I asked him, hey, I got a guy on the phone named, you know, Dwight Hamilton, asking, are you guys training your dogs to use against the indigenous people? And he said, no, we haven't got to that yet. We haven't got to that yet. What does that tell us? See? We got to get prepared. They're doing something out there. And that's what we need to do.
the word yet. It's almost like the word but. It starts off good, but then there's that yet.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's what they're getting prepared to do, to harm indigenous people and people of color. And once again, I will say this on this radio show, and I'll will it back to you, sister. We need to know who our enemy is. We don't need to side with that guy. I don't care what system he pronounces, whether he's friendly or not. There are people out there stepping up to really see the big picture. But keep in mind with this, many, many years ago, when them four ships arrived here, it was the indigenous people that welcomed them with love, harmony, embracing with that caring because they had nothing. And we taught them everything. And in return, this is what they did to us. Almost 600 years later, this is what they did to the indigenous population. And we're still in it today. Now it's reflecting back to their own people and many others. But I will end with this part because I know you got time running out. If I could say this in Lakota, I would appreciate it, Leona.
Please do.
Mitakiepi, chante washte wabalezikilet hokatakya wankapo. Mila huska kilena dakshicha e chumpi na ake yutokte. Nampetu onji e chumpte hanta techia walakokte. Nahena echa e chumpi wak hanshicha kilena mila huska epi. Tuene hechus e woglake kile takpe apsini na wa e akapsi, e echa hena hechumpi. So, toha wolak hote istaku wichoya nitrop in luhak de hunter, chanupo akanki hena echa wahoya kinkdena, wakantanka kichi manetu, na nichi hunkdena unchi makha na hutopa hena, hena awaniglak octena onichi octena etaha, taku ya chimpiki, you skakte. Briefly, I give that message to all of you that if we don't follow the path of our four-legged creatures and the wing creatures, the Earth Mother, the Father above us, and all the four winds, we're going to end up like that white devil. And that's what he's doing. He's even trying to control all them. So with that, as an open heart, my phone number 605-517-1547, second number 605-517-2621. Please, people, call me. I'm computer illiterate. I don't want to be part of the machine. I know if the great mystery had told us to pick the machine up, he would have gave us it to use it to this day in 2020. So thank you, Leona. I wish to come back on whenever you guys want. I shouldn't say wish. I hope you get a hold of me to come back on, and we can start right off where we are, and let's stay together on these issues because they're brewing something out there, people. We need to get prepared for it. Thank you, and the only way we're going to solve this problem is we got to get them other countries that dislike what America's, you know, billionaires and all these, you know, big shot, you know, Bilderbergs and, you know, all these Zionist people are doing. That's the way to hold them accountable, and it's going to take propitiate fundamental practice complaints and genocide complaints to hold them accountable, and it has to be done from a people's level in every state, even from a reservation. Thank you. Much love to all of you. Stay strong, and let's keep this fight going. Thank you.
Ho-ho. And I was going to say, the caller that was on before was from Montana. So we had someone else on from might have been one of the people that have been on with us before with you. But thank you so much for being on with us, Chinupa. And again, Janet, you want to say a few last words with this? And again, I'm hoping that I can have you back on again because we've had so many different discussions and things going on during these interviews that it might be good to have another one before the 22nd.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll be available to come back on just about any time. I want to mention the National Day of Freedom and Justice Facebook page. We also have a new website. It is not yet complete, but it does have a lot of information on it, and it is up and running. That is freedomandjustice.info, and that's the word and, not the and sign. So freedomandjustice.info. I can also be reached by either calling or texting 540-958-1847. We encourage everybody, if you're not involved, then please do get involved. you know, we can do alternative involvements. You don't have to be out in the heat on your feet. We can do lives via Facebook. We can do Zooms. And we're also doing caravan rallies. So any type of environment, you know, that you feel comfortable with, we will work with you. And we're also going to push for the voter rights of our loved ones inside prisons. They all deserve the right to vote. And we want to really get on our politicians and let them know that this is something that we want to happen now.
Thank you so much. And hopefully next Monday or maybe next Saturday to have you back on again so we can talk more about these rallies coming up. And I hope to have everyone on then because this is awesome. This is something I haven't seen before. People of all races coming together in harmony and unity to fight for justice for all and freedom, and especially for our incarcerated loved ones, because we need to have some hope for them, because there are too many suicides going on in this country today, and it needs to stop. The suicides, the homicides, the injustices that's going on. So, like they say, let no weapons formed against any of them prosper. And I thank you once again, both of you, for being on, Chinupa. Thank you for coming on, and Janet. And again, I hope to hear from both of you next week. And Janet, I'll be talking to you about the date and the time, and also you, Chinupa. Thank you so much.
I think what
you're doing, this whole thing coming together, is it's overwhelming, because I know that this is just what's needed for everybody in the communities across the country. And those people in the world are seeing and laughing at this country. They are making a difference as well, just joining forces with everybody. So I thank you both for being on.
Thank you. We love
you.
Thank you.
And we'll talk next week. Thank you so much.